Take Pop Culture Happy Hour and more with you with the NPR One app. NPR One finds you the best from public radio and beyond. National and local stories, many of which have nothing to do with the election, and your favorite podcasts. NPR One is ready to make Thanksgiving, waiting in line, or waiting for a friend better. Find NPR One on your app store.
Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, our roundtable podcast about what we are watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See, and I'm here in the studio with Stephen Thompson. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
Oh, we have a treat today.
Yes, we do.
Oh, we have a treat today. So many of you know that we were recently on the road doing several shows on the West Coast, and today we're bringing you a good chunk of one of those shows, our Los Angeles show.
Yes.
And our fourth chair at our Los Angeles show, we are delighted to tell you, if you don't already know, was our friend Kumail Nanjiani, a wonderful comedian, actor, brilliant dude. We had so much fun with Kumail and my Twitter sparring partner about romantic comedies.
You get to actually talk about romantic comedies for an entire segment of this episode.
That's right. So first up, you'll hear a conversation about romantic comedies, and then you're going to hear a quiz that I gave about alternate identities and disguises, which means if the name Anastasia Beaverhausen means anything to you, you will enjoy this quiz. So here we go with Kumail Nanjiani from the Regent Theater in Los Angeles. Those of you who follow Pop Culture Happy Hour, those of you who perhaps follow some of us on Twitter, you may know that one of the ways that we know Kumail is that Kumail and I have gotten into a couple of protracted discussions about romantic comedies. And I believe that this first came up because you tweeted something like, "My favorite genre of movie is where people fall in love with Julia Roberts for no reason." Is that right?
I don't remember it, but That's a pretty good tweet. It was probably, I tweeted after the 40th time I'd watched Notting Hill.
Yes. So we have this interest in common, and we went back and forth a little bit about romantic comedies until I was, I think, permanently topped forever by a story that Kumail told me about his wedding day.
Oh, yeah. So my wife, Emily V. Gordon, and I, we got married. I don't know if you're clapping for just marriage. We got married in Chicago, and we just like went and stood in line at City Hall with like a couple of our friends, you know, before she ever met my parents. That's a whole other thing. Let's not get into that. But we stood in line, we got married, then we went and got brunch. And we told her, we're like, we just got married, and we got free orange juice.
Nice.
And then we went home and we watched Four Weddings and a Funeral. It's interesting because I've watched that movie so many times, and my memories of it used to be me as a teenager watching that movie and then having it replaced by the memory of watching it with my new wife. Mm-hmm. So now when I watch Four Weddings and a Funeral, I think of that and not being miserable in high school.
Huh. So you watched romantic comedies as a miserable high school student?
Yeah, I did. I watched horror movies, and I watched romantic comedies because I wanted to balance it out. I think it was, you know, horror movies, the stakes are super high. These people could die. They balance it out with lowest stakes possible, just 90 minutes of two white people figuring out that they belong together.
You like Notting Hill, right?
I love Notting Hill. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, even though you take the position that she's a terrible person.
I do, I think.
For those of you who have not seen Notting Hill, if you have not seen Notting Hill...
Leave. Go watch Notting Hill.
Hugh Grant is a very nice British man who owns a bookstore, and Julia Roberts is an American actress, and they meet and they fall in love. Spoiler. I'm sorry. So go ahead. You take the position that she's a bad person.
She is because she totally, when they first meet, they hook up and they hang out, and she does not mention that she's dating Alec Baldwin. And he.
It's true.
Spoiler, yeah.
Yeah. Spoiler, she's playing a Julia Roberts type, and Alec Baldwin is playing an Alec Baldwin type. Huh? Anna Scott, that's her name. And she doesn't tell him, and that's bad. And then she comes back into town, and then she like trash talks him while he's on set with the head. Whenever she needs him, I'm getting very worked up. When her nude pictures get leaked and she needs to hide, she comes crawling back to Hugh Grant. I feel like whenever she wants him, it's just based on selfish stuff.
Yep. She's a monster.
She's a monster that looks like Julia Roberts.
Yeah. I had never seen the film before. I watched, just for this, because I'm not a big romantic comedy person, Sleepless in Seattle, When Harry Met Sally, Four Weddings and a Funeral, Notting Hill, and on Linda's advice, Think Like a Man. The Gabriel Union vehicle. And, you know, first of all, I want to say, I just want to reassure all the straight folks out there that the wacky foibles of heterosexual mating rituals are just as endlessly fascinating as you think they are. I think it's great that for thousands of years, yours are the only story that got told, so that's great. Yeah, I mean, I think as a queer kid growing up, I looked to romantic comedies, if I looked at them at all, which was not much, as like imprinting, like stereo instructions. This is how this happens. And I think straight people, to some extent, internalize these same messages, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I think so.
I'm still trying to figure it out.
The classic version, I guess, would be Sweet Home Alabama, where there's the normal guy who's very, like, down the middle, who's right for you, and then there's the hot, impulsive person who's bad for you. And so the message of these things is be selfish, think of your feelings first, hurt somebody else. Mm-hmm. Doesn't internalizing these messages just make a generation of sociopaths? That's what I'm asking.
I agree. I do. Emily and I have actually spoken about how that, like, the sort of the 90s romantic comedies have ruined dating for a lot of people because they expect, like, you know, love at first sight kind of stuff, and none of them portray the work that goes into having a successful relationship, the negotiation, the compromise, you know, all that stuff, the great stuff. But so many of these movies, I think, end when they get together, when I think the interesting stuff happens
exactly
after that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I watched...
I love rom-coms.
I'm just thinking. Go ahead, Thompson.
Yeah, I watched several of the same movies to prepare. I watched your Four Weddings. I rewatched Four Weddings. I rewatched Notting Hill, which I had seen like dozens of times 20 years ago and then forgot. But I watched it this morning to refresh my memory through the prism of you thinking she's a monster. And you're not wrong.
Yeah.
She's guarded. She has reason to be guarded, but she's kind of a jerk.
She's 100% a jerk.
Yeah.
She's. I feel like a lot of Richard Curtis, and I love his work, but he has this like fetishizing of the American female that he does in Four Weddings and a Funeral. He does it in Love Actually. He does it in this movie. Mm-hmm. And to him, I think a lot of the flaws are wiped away by them being American or something.
Well, except in Four Weddings and a Funeral, where they put poor Andie MacDowell and just plop her in this movie where she does not belong and set her up to fail. And like for years, my memories of this movie were, well, that's a good movie. Andie MacDowell is terrible in it. And it's very clear, rewatching it, that she was clearly written to be an Englishwoman, and they just decided to plop in an American at the last minute and give her the same lines. So for the longest time, I thought Andie MacDowell was like a bad actress.
I'd never thought of it like that. Like, what specific line? There's never a time where she asks for a crumpet or anything.
She gives a lot of these...
She pledges her loyalty to the queen.
Yeah. Could keep going with this.
I love driving on the left.
That's it. There's no more after that.
That's all. We got them all. But like, it wasn't really, like, I think until I saw like Magic Mike XXL and Andie MacDowell is great in it.
She is.
Like, Andie MacDowell is super funny and awesome and just rad in Magic Mike XXL. And so then seeing this movie and realizing that she has been done a terrible disservice by this film in which...
All right.
Okay, sorry. Uh-huh. Getting back to larger points. A lot of these movies... I also watched 27 Dresses. Has anybody seen 27 Dresses? Okay.
I like 27 Dresses. Okay.
Linda Holmes loves 27 Dresses. 27 Dresses has many things to recommend it. It's written by Aileen Brosh McKenna, who works on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah, it is.
So it's got some pedigree. It's a very believable story in which Katherine Heigl is a loveless spinster.
I can't figure out the tone with which that's said.
I was just gonna say. I think he's being sarcastic.
Being a little sarcastic. I like to leave it up to interpretation. There are some interesting friendships in that movie, and I think that movie has much more to say about friendship than it does about romance, because the romance is idiotic and they do not belong together at all. And I spent the entire film rooting for them to not get together because, for one thing, he's awful. There was an Onion story. James Marsden is awful in that movie. Anybody remember there was an Onion story?
Who are you?
Hater of that character, Stephen Thompson. Uh-huh. There was an Onion story a million years ago. Romantic comedy behavior gets real life man arrested.
That's a very funny article.
And in this movie, he like gets hold of her planner and reads it, like writes his name and number over like things on her to-do list. It's so creepy and wrong, and he's a jerk.
You know what? The show Brooklyn Nine-Nine, kind of with Joel Trujillo character, kind of comments on that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's right. So first I have to step back. When you were talking about Four Weddings and a Funeral, this is one of the like most foundational disagreements that Kumail and I have had.
I know what this is about.
It's about the end of Four Weddings and a Funeral when she says, "Is it still raining?
I hadn't noticed. Great line.
Which I maintain is the line that makes people hate her performance in that movie, right?
That die was cast a little bit earlier than that.
You think she's secretly British. Be quiet.
Yeah. I can say, wait one second. As somebody who watched that film for the first time yesterday, but having heard about that line for all my life, when it actually happened, it blends. It doesn't stand out. It's just a thing that happens. It is of a piece with the rest of her performance. However, in the other one, the Notting Hill, the scene of I'm just a girl.
That's not a good line.
Because they call back to it. That is supposed to be so stunning and wonderful that they then refer back to it, and that's the thing that makes him change his mind. Nope. So consider that.
But, yes. Okay, but... explain your position regarding that line from Andy McDowell.
My position on that line is, first of all, headline pro. I think it's so obviously raining so hard. I think she's being playful. She's like, you know, love is so transcendent that I don't notice it's raining. Of course, I know it's raining because it's raining. So I think it's like she's like playing with him. She's like, is it raining? I hadn't noticed. And I think that's her way of telling him like, hey, let's go inside.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. Because she is trying to get him to come out with it, right? Spit it out because it's Hugh Grant. And he's all stammery and charming and diffident.
Right.
And it's like, just spit it out.
And that's I think your position is that she's being sincere. Like it's like a romantic line.
Yes.
Okay.
Like she genuinely can't tell that it's raining.
Well, or she that she's saying she hadn't noticed that it was raining. Like that it's supposed to be like I'm so in the throes of love that I hadn't noticed it was raining. Like literally that she hadn't noticed.
I think her read is supposed to be like, is it raining? I hadn't noticed. Yeah.
Better. Better.
All right.
Markedly better.
I could honestly talk about this. for 3 hours. And I don't mean rom-coms. I mean that line.
I understand that. Glenn, what did you think of... Tell me, you have your mouth is open. What are you wanting to say?
No, just like... Okay, so Sleepless in Seattle.
Yes.
What I like about that film is not much. But what I like about that film is
that it
simultaneously exists in two co-equal realities. It's like the Schrodinger's cat of romantic comedies because there is one version of this film where all the stuff the kid does is precocious, look at kids do the darndest things. And there is another reading, a valid reading, that kid is a sociopath. that any scene we don't see
you
the kid...
You find sociopaths in every
movie. No. I guarantee you could read it again, you could see it again, in any scene where you don't see the kid, he is somewhere in the neighborhood doing terrible things to kittens. That kid is twisted.
Why?
Because he just does, he calls into the show.
Dude, his mom died.
Yeah, I got that. I figured that out.
I get that.
60 minutes in. And there's this thing that the movie is doing where it's trying to work on a meta level where we hear that his mom used to peel an apple in a certain way, and we see her peeling an apple in a certain way. What I like about it is the structure. We don't actually see them get together. But when we do, he calls into the radio show and explains why he loved his wife so much. He asks him why he loved so much. And what he says is, well, how long is your show? And it was just a million little things. Now, a wise podcast judge once said, specificity is the soul of narrative. That is not a panty-dropping line. That will not get anybody interested in you. That is just, there's nothing there.
Like, was, oh, the things she did.
Yes, that exactly. That's all it was.
But it's Tom Hanks saying it, and yeah, you see all the million things in his eyes.
It's a male. It's a male. It's on the radio. It's on the radio.
Yeah, but okay.
Yeah. Think Like a Man is actually, because that is a cast filled with entirely symmetrical people.
Telegenic, beautiful
deeply,
actors.
Deeply attractive people that, even though you can kind of see this whole thing on rails and you can see the turn when it comes, it was actually really enjoyable.
I like to Think Like a Man. That's one of the reasons I told you to see it. I mean, I think so I had the same reaction. I think that's an enjoyable, I mean, it's kind of doofy like a lot of the big ensemble ones because they never have time to serve any particular story. But having said that, I think that's a cute movie.
And one of the ones I recommended to you was Crossing Delancey, which is a very old film where it's Amy Irving and Peter Riegert. He is a pickle shop owner. She is a bookstore
wondered where
clerk.
That was going, didn't you?
Yes, that old plot. And there's this slimy author played by Gerwin Crabb, who is very funny in the film. The only thing about the film is that there's this Jewish matchmaker played by Vera Miles who the Anti-Defamation League should look into it because
that is a
broad
characterization.
Broad
that is a broad character. I really was happy that you recommended that to me because I really enjoyed that movie. And one of the things that I mentioned to you after I watched it was I'm surprised how little he's in it.
Yeah,
he's Peter Riegert, who plays kind of her love interest, is not in it that much. He's just kind of around the edges of the movie and kind of available as an option that she's not considering or taking seriously. He's not in it that much, and when he is, he's very kind of confident in this like kind of sexy confident way that like, look, I have a type. This is what it is. If you see this movie, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. And so I was very into it for that reason. And it doesn't play like a romantic comedy in the traditional sense that it feels more like you're supposed to respect it more. Do you see what I mean? Like it plays more like a comedy that is romantic as opposed to like 27 Dresses, which which plays like it's fine with that movie if Steven reacts the way that Steven reacts to it. You know what I mean?
When is this movie from?
Oh, 80s. I was a movie usher, and it was either watch that over and over and over again, or a movie called The January Man. You know The January Man? Nobody knows The January Man. It's a Kevin Kline film. It's serial killer. It
Wait,
is terrible.
What's it called?
The January Man.
The January Man.
It is terrible. So this movie was kind of charming. It had music by The Roaches, and the music in these films is a very important thing.
Yes.
Didn't dig the music in Four Weddings and a Funeral. Mm-hmm. Also didn't dig the fact that like the gay dude in it is just so filled with life that he dies because he danced too hard.
Yeah. There is a little bit of the magical gay couple in that movie. And they're kind of the only couple that actually belong together.
Absolutely.
In that entire movie. And there are like 90 couples.
His waistcoats have more personality than he does. But that does give the partner the whole Auden eulogy thing, which is the thing that stands out from the film.
I'm sorry. So much to parse through.
Okay.
I'm literally beside myself. But that's interesting that you say that. I had truly never thought of it as the gay man who dances so hard, he dies in the magical gay couple. And they actually say, like, at the spoiler alert, there is a funeral. At the funeral, they say, traitors amongst us, you know, that they had, like, the best possible relationship. I had not thought of it like that. Another thing I want to mention, I saw this as, like, a teenager in Pakistan. It took me 5 viewings to realize that they were a gay couple together. I honestly was like watching it for the 6th time, and there's a point where he like rubs omelet out of his beard and like
they're like
kisses
introduced
him.
That way. Yeah,
yeah. Right. And I was like, oh, okay.
That's standard foreplay.
Yeah. And there are. I will mention, because Kumail mentioned earlier, it does, especially kind of like the 80s and 90s rom-coms that I think he has watched a lot of and I've watched a lot of, do tend to be an extremely white genre, which is another reason why I try to remind people of, you know, ones like Think Like a Man and the
and relative... Love and Basketball, right?
I'm sorry?
Love and Basketball, isn't that a romantic
comedy?
Well,
Love and Basketball. Love and Basketball I don't necessarily consider a rom-com. I consider more of a romantic drama, but it is indeed one of the most romantic movies maybe ever.
We had a whole discussion in advance of this about the XY axis of rom and com.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, how do you define a rom-com? Or is it like porn, you know it when you see it?
It's not like porn. I don't consider that to be a rom-com.
Way more rom. Yeah.
Sometimes some com. There's some com. Throw a little com in there.
The timing's always off on the com, though.
Yeah.
I think it is, but it is a little bit of that, like you kind of know it when you see it there. I think particularly in the 90s, there was a stretch of time when you sort of knew that there were certain actors, and you would see that like the movie poster would have like, she's like this, and he's like this, and then you kind of know, and you would see them kind of, they were running through, you know, Julia Roberts did a bunch of them, and Sandra Bullock did a bunch
of them, and Meg Ryan
did a bunch of them. And I think it is a kind of like a marketing, I think there's a lot of marketing signaling, like what you would see in the, you know, in the trailer or whatever would sort of tip you off about what it was. But I don't know that I have a good definition. I mean, I think it has to, I think typically they will have a happy ending with people ending up together. They will have some sort of unusual or challenging meeting, you know? Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say, if it starts with a Motown song.
Yes.
And it would be over in 4 minutes if people just told the truth.
Right.
Steven is very upset because he watched while you were sleeping.
Yeah.
Literally a 15-second conversation would end that movie dead in its tracks. And it would end the same way.
It's not a documentary.
I will say the people ending up together is very good, but that's how I was trying to think of it. They're not about like the nitty-gritty of a relationship. It's more about people realizing that they belong together.
Yeah.
My Best Friend's Wedding, I think, is a rom-com. That's the exception to that rule.
Agreed.
Spoiler alert.
Agreed.
And then I was trying to think of like signifiers, markers. They always have, one thing that you pointed out is they always have like kind of a fun profession.
Yeah.
Like in Tom Hanks and Sleepless in Seattle is an architect, but it's not really part of it.
Yeah.
Right. But he's an architect. Or in Notting Hill, he's a bookstore guy. Or right. You've Got Mail. One's like a conglomerate bookstore and one's a little bookstore.
Right. Yeah. No, it's true. It's always publishing or editors.
That's just to afford the great apartments. That's basically it. You need to justify the apartments. I think also these films, their engine is likability.
Yeah.
And that's why I like the ones that play against it, play to the back end of likability, like My Best Friend's Wedding, which is really trying to do something. It's trying to walk a line that is very hard to walk, because as soon as you start to hate her, then... I mean, the plot of the thing is, do things work out well for this person? And if you don't like them, then... That's why I think it requires, in Sleepless in Seattle again, Bill Pullman to not
Paxton.
Be right for her because he's got allergies. I don't... And when she dumps him because there's a heart on the Empire State Building, he has to be like, yep.
She dumps him
okay,
before
then.
The heart is on the Empire State Building.
That is not believable. Nobody is like that.
All right, plausibility is not the right metric.
Likeability is.
I could do this all day, but plausibility is not the right metric.
I want to say a lot of these rom-coms also have the wrong guy, the wrong girl.
Right.
That's a thing that shows up. And I will disagree with you. I think Bill Pullman in Sleepless in Seattle is the high watermark of... He's such a goober in that movie.
Aww.
He's so perfect as the wrong guy.
Right.
He's a really great guy. He's a goober.
Right.
He's just...
And he's a goober and the right guy in While You Were Sleeping.
That's true. Yeah. Then he gets to be the right guy in While You Were Sleeping. All right. As I said, we could do this all day. We could have
Why
argued.
Don't we?
We could have argued.
When's your next show, Regent?
So, again, to follow the continuing adventures, you can follow all of us on Twitter. Perhaps we'll revisit this at some point. I feel like there's so much ground to cover.
We barely scratched the surface.
I've heard that you're making a movie. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. We are... all right, I'll plug it. my wife and I wrote a movie, and I'm in it, and it's going to come out next year. Right now, it's called The Big Sick, but the name's going to change. So just look for the rom-com about a brown man and a white woman starring me.
Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour and the following message come from the new original comedy series Search Party on TBS, an official selection at the 2016 South by Southwest Film Festival. Watch the mystery unravel as a lost soul and her group of friends search for a missing girl they barely even knew. You can binge the entire season of Search Party in 1 week, continuing tonight at 11, 10 Central on TBS.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Okay, it's quiz time.
I want to say, before we start, I may go to the excuse that I was born and raised in Pakistan. I may invoke that a few times.
That's
as
totally
an excuse
fine.
For not knowing.
Totally yeah. fair, totally fair. Our theme for this quiz is secret identities, costumes, alter egos, etc. Right.
Glenn knows nothing about that.
Mm. Yeah. In the film Point Break, Patrick Swayze's ragtag band of surfers is identified as possibly the guys robbing banks in ex-president Halloween masks in part because of what? A certain sports team tattoo. B, a tendency toward mooning. C, a signature scent. D, a telltale pair of shoes.
Oh, boy, I've never seen Point Break.
Got tattoo, mooning,
I know, I knew this was going to happen. Tattoo, why not?
No, it's the mooning.
Yes.
The mooning, yeah.
I knew that one, and I was born and raised in Pakistan.
Kumail Nanjiani. Anastasia Beaverhausen is the alias commonly used by what sitcom character? A, Karen Walker on Will and Grace. B, Elaine Bennis on Seinfeld. C, Phoebe Buffay on Friends. D, Samantha on Sex and the City.
D seems so obvious because she's like a sex person on that show.
A sex person.
Sex person.
I was born and raised in Pakistan. You know what? I'm going to go with A, Megan Mullally.
You are correct.
Yes.
She explains that name as Anastasia, like Russian royalty, and Beaverhausen, like where the beaver lives.
Yep.
Oh, no.
I should watch this show, I guess. Yeah.
Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
In the Brady Bunch episode, Peter and the Wolf, Greg gets Peter to disguise himself so that Greg can use him to facilitate a double date. How does Peter conceal his identity? A, he speaks in a Russian accent. B, he wears a military uniform. C, he speaks only in verse. D, he wears a fake mustache.
The silliest one to me is speaks only in verse. I'm going to go with speaks only in verse.
It's the mustache. He goes by the name Phil Packer and has a mustache. Glenn Weldon,
yep.
In one episode of the 1970s series Starsky and Hutch,
got it.
It emerges that there are Starsky and Hutch impersonators roaming the streets. What are they doing? A, committing crimes to discredit the real detectives. B, appearing in a burlesque show. C, giving false information to reporters. D, solving crimes, only badly.
The only one that's an established comic book superhero plotline is surprisingly not the burlesque show. It's A, so I'm going to go with A.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Kumail, in the 1993 film Dave, Kevin Kline plays a man hired to impersonate the president to keep the public from learning what? You should see this if you haven't seen this, buddy.
I have seen it.
Yeah, yeah. You've seen Dave.
He's gonna get this.
To keep the public from learning what? A, the president has been kidnapped. B, the president has quit and run off with his mistress. C, the president has had a stroke. D, the president is missing.
Okay. One weird fact. I had a poster of this movie. But only because somehow my dad got a ton of movie posters and I put them all up. At some of those movies I haven't seen. Dave, I've watched once. What's the first one?
Kidnapped.
That can't be it, because there was a video game called Bad Dudes where the president was kidnapped by ninjas. And Dave would not steal from a Sega Genesis game.
The second one is quit and ran off with his mistress.
Okay, well, let's put a pin in that.
The third one is had a stroke.
That's too much of a bummer for the kind of movie I know it is.
And fourth is the president is missing.
Okay, so missing and run off with his mistress are in the same ballpark. So I would say I'll go with the more specific one, B.
It's actually the stroke.
Oh, what a bummer.
Yep. All right. Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
In Teen Wolf, Michael J. Fox's character, Scott, is into basketball. In Teen Wolf 2.
Oh, for the love of God.
What is the sport played by Jason Bateman's
I do
Tom?
Really not know this?
Okay, I knew the Dave one. I have not seen Teen Wolf 2.
We should swap. Can we swap? Yeah.
We could change identities. Nah. I grew up in Pakistan.
Well, you've got the pronunciation for it.
All right. In Teen Wolf 2, what is the sport that Jason Bateman's character Todd plays? Is it A, baseball, B, football, C, karate, or D, boxing?
This is just a 1-in-4 shot. I'm going to say karate.
Boxing! Because when you become a werewolf, what is the best way to use your powers? One, basketball. Two, boxing.
Yeah. Absolutely true.
Those movies are like a case study in the most like high stakes thing happening and using them in the most low stakes way.
I agree. Glenn Weldon.
Yep.
Parks and Recreation's office pariah went by Jerry for most of the show's run. But what turned out to be his real name? A, Jerry. B, Larry. C, Terry. D, Gary. And I will just tell you, they called him all of those things.
Yeah, they did.
At different times.
Someone's throwing me off.
B.
B, Larry?
Yep.
No, Gary.
Gary.
It is Gary. Kumail, the spy show Remington Steele, technically a romantic comedy, centered around the character of Remington Steele, whose origins were what? A, he was a former jewel thief who invented Steele as an identity to escape prosecution. B, he was an author of detective novels who assumed the identity of his own character. Kumail's nodding so excitedly. C, he was part of the witness protection program. D, he assumed a fictional identity invented by his business partner.
I watched this show. God, I hope it's right because I love this show. D.
D is correct. D is absolutely correct.
With a huge crush on Stephanie Zimbalist, she had her way with me.
Yeah. As I said, that's kind of a romantic comedy. It checks out that you've been
It totally that. Is. It's sort of like a moonlighting kind of vibe.
Absolutely.
Totally, yeah. Great checks show. Out. He was supposed to do James Bond and didn't do it because he was tied into Remington Steele, and I think we're all richer for it.
Wouldn't have gotten the Timothy Dalton stuff without it. Stephen Thompson, in an episode of MASH, Hawkeye and Trapper create the fictional Captain Jonathan Tuttle, who becomes inconvenient after what happens. A, he is awarded a medal. B, he is quoted in the newspaper. C, he is implicated in a sex scandal. D, he is rumored to be a spy.
Ooh.
Medal, newspaper, sex scandal, spy.
Man, my
novel is called that.
I'm gonna go with a medal.
That is correct.
Yep.
He wins a medal.
God. Dignity salvaged.
Glenn Weldon, this is our last round.
Okay.
On Cheers, Anton Kreitzer is a fictional person created how? A, by Norm to scare people who work for him. B, by Cliff to back up some of his more outlandish factual claims. C, by Carla to make her ex-husband jealous. Or D, by Woody to make his parents believe he's working for a bank.
Give me the name again.
Anton Kreitzer.
All right. Anton.
Is that going to help you?
Yeah, because Carla doesn't seem like an Anton kind of person. Woody seems too dumb to come with Anton. Cliff wouldn't bother coming up with that because he just asserts his version of reality. Therefore, by process of elimination, I am left with Norm.
You are right. Kumail, one holiday episode of Friends finds Rachel and Phoebe entering the apartment and finding Ross dressed as an armadillo, Chandler dressed as Santa, and Joey dressed as what? A, I know. It's very good. A, a turtle. B, a horse. C, Cupid. D, Superman.
I'm going to go with my gut. I'll go with Superman.
That is correct. And finally, Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
On How I Met Your Mother, Ted returned every year to the same Halloween party, hoping to run into a woman he had met there who was dressed as what?
Oh, man.
A, a witch. B, a pumpkin. C, a ghost. D, a librarian.
I'm thrown off by the ghost, like, covering her face, and if that is like a, if that's a complication, if he's like looking to see if there's ghosts. I'm gonna overthink this, get it wrong, and say ghosts.
It's the pumpkin, actually.
Okay. I would have said ghosts too.
It's the pumpkin, yeah. And he goes every year dressed as a hanging Chad, because that's what he was the year that it happened.
Wow.
So he goes back every year just to hang.
Wow.
All right. So I believe you are our winner.
Yep.
Kumail Nanjiani
Thank
is
you.
Our winner.
Thank you very much.
We will be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from the new original comedy Search Party on TBS. Here's John Early describing his character, Elliot.
Elliot is a self-made man, just very much of this kind of multi-hyphenate generation, which is so true to so many people I know, of just like actor, producer, event planner. You know, he does everything, which means he kind of does nothing.
You can binge the entire season of Search Party in 1 week, starting Monday, November 21st at 11, 10 Central on TBS.
It is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
Two things. The British comic book artist Steve Dillon died this week. That's not making me happy. I'm not a monster. But he was known... I first came to know him from a series that he did the art for called Hellblazer back in the 80s. He also did Judge Dredd, Punisher, and Preacher. You might notice a theme here. It was a time of really uber-violent, nihilistic comics, and even when I didn't respond to the stories, because I did find the stories a bit dour and just like made for and or by 14-year-old straight boys, I always really dug his art. And there is an image that got shared very widely last week that he drew, in which the Punisher punches a bear in the face. And anybody could draw that, right? He did the expression of confusion on the bear's face so unforgettably and so specifically, utter confusion. So that's making me happy. The other thing, because that is kind of a bummer, is this comic, Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat. Okay. It's written by Kate Leth. It's the art is by Brittany L. Williams and Natasha Allegri. The character of Patsy Walker has been bouncing around the Marvel Universe forever. This series is about what happens when Patsy Walker decides that she wants to start a temp agency for super-powered beings who want just to get a job. They don't want to fight evil. They don't want to save the world. They just need a job. And this is my favorite kind of world building, really, where you take a huge established existing property like the Marvel Universe and you go over to a little used corner of it and you just do something with it that doesn't necessarily, that kind of interacts with maybe some of the bigger things, but it's really, it's got its own sensibility. This is what Squirrel Girl is doing. This is what Miss Marvel is doing in a different way. This is some of my favorite comic book making going on right now. That's Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Glenn Weldon. Kumail Nanjiani, what is making you happy this week, sir?
A couple of things that are making me really happy is one of them requires a little bit of background. When Emily and I, who's now my wife, when we first started dating 10 years ago, you know, I really liked her. We'd only hung out a couple of times. And then I called her once. Maybe this was, you know, this would have been date three. I called her and she answered the phone and she was crying. She was crying so hard she couldn't get the words out. And I was like, oh my God, what happened? Call me back. She's like, let me call you back. And this took her like 2 minutes to get out. Let me call you back when I get my stuff together, I'll tell you what the issue is. And so for 10 minutes, I'm like, what happened? I really like this girl. I don't know her that well. We're going to have to work through some family stuff together. I want to help her, but I don't know what's going on. And then she called me, and she said that the reason she was crying so much was because she had seen the finale of Six Feet Under for the second time. And my first thought was, hey, this could be something. But it took us, I don't know why it took us this long, but we just started, I'd never seen Six Feet Under. I just started watching it a couple weeks ago. I'm at the end of season one, and that show is so good. It's making me so happy right now. It's people who haven't seen it, watch it. It's truly, truly wonderful. The other thing that is making me happy is I decided to go back and watch commentaries on a lot of my favorite movies. I watched the commentary on Broadcast News, Tootsie, all the Guillermo del Toro movies, and it's really like making me happy because these movies I've loved for many, many, many years, and hearing the people who made it talk about the decisions they made, it recontextualizes a lot of stuff, and it's just been enriching my life.
That's awesome. Thank you very much, Kumail Nanjiani. Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
If I may chill for an NPR music project.
Absolutely, you may.
Several friends of the show put together this gorgeous piece that just aired the other day, or just was put up online the other day. It is a 24-minute discussion of the My Chemical Romance album, The Black Parade. The collection of minds put to the service of this record is glorious. It's Daoud Tyler Amin, who's been on our show talking about Hamilton and is amazing. Tracy Clayton
from
Another Round, and Hanif Willis Abdur Rakib from MTV News. And they are three sort of once closeted fans of My Chemical Romance, which, if you don't know, My Chemical Romance was basically like, it was a white emo band from Hot Topic, New Jersey.
Did you have to specify white?
Well, good point. All of these writers would not ordinarily be in the demographic of My Chemical Romance, which for several years like only wore like band uniforms.
And that's their point, is that they felt they weren't really the target demographic of this band.
Right, and it's
the
just
most
this
obvious.
And so yeah, it's this gorgeous discussion of just people talking about music that's meant something to them that people don't ordinarily necessarily in 2016 talk about as meaning something to them. And I really, really love this piece. So it's called Join the Black Parade, My Chemical Romance and the Politics of Taste. It's a great discussion. It has a great piece of writing with it, as you can imagine, because those are all great writers. Anyway, check it out.
And you can find that at npr.org. Thank you, Stephen Thompson. So what is making me happy this week? We have been doing these shows, so I have gradually had to be more and more honest about what it is I'm actually watching the most, because I, you know, the kind of like high-end stuff I did in the beginning shows. And now we're at the point where it's like, here's what I'm doing. I've been watching Night Court. Because if you want to understand what sitcoms were, that is a show that is a great example of, it's not like one of the most super iconic, it's not Cheers, it's not a bad one, it's just a kind of a very, very well-executed, competent, kind of middle-of-the-road sitcom, which is not a thing that I mean as a negative. I will warn you, if you go back and find it, I've been buying episodes for 99 cents on Amazon. If you go back and find it, the politics are of the 80s. They are not of now. And even though it is, I think, a show that's meant to be very intelligent and sensitive, there are moments where you'll be like, whoa, we would not say that way now. But I do think it is an ensemble cast that has a lot of very funny people in it. It's goofy in a way that sometimes I miss in comedy now. It's one of the reasons why I loved like Happy Endings, why that's like one of my favorite shows, is because it has like tons and tons of jokes. Night Court is like that too. And there is a running gag across episodes in which Brent Spiner played a kind of a hick, and it's kind of a hick stereotype at the beginning, but then it gets weirder and weirder, and it turns out first he claimed they were from the South, but they're actually Yugoslavian, and it's this... It's such a funny, odd... It had some really kind of odd qualities to it. I've been watching Night Court. That's what I've been doing on tour, and it has been making me happy this week. And, of course, thank you so very much to all of you. Our show would not exist without the wonderful people who listen to it. We have said many times, we have practically never met anyone who listened to the show who we didn't just have so much fun with and think was great. We're so grateful that you guys listen, that you've continued to listen. Please support public media, support public radio. If you are doing that, you are supporting our show and the Politics Podcast and Code Switch and lots of other projects that we really care about and know that a lot of you really care about. So thank you so much for coming. Thank you and good night.